Crimson Tide?
As you can see, there's a new set of notes for today. And what happened was that at the end of class last time, I realized that the presentation I was about to give you and how to go from computing modular symbols M2 gamma 0 of n to a basis for S2 gamma 0 of n, that is a basis of cusforms of weight 2 and level n. It's pretty complicated, the one that I described in the notes that I originally handed out to you. It involves all kinds of linear algebra, maps from one level to another level, etc., etc. And in fact, there's a simpler algorithm, which may or may not be as efficient, though I thought about it a lot yesterday and I decided that the simpler algorithm can be just as efficient, depending on what you want to compute, maybe even more so. There are various optimizations. The one nice thing about the simpler algorithm is that in order to understand it, it's necessary to understand basic, interesting background material about modular forms, which has the wonderful property that it's also not too hard to prove those background things. So you'll learn more about modular forms and Heck operators, and the reason that you'll learn more is in order to understand this other algorithm. So that's the main thing I'm going to talk about today. So I implemented the other algorithm over the weekend, so I'll be able to show it to you running on the screen. Looks very blurry.
This is for the
PC. I just make the font huge. That should be clear enough that you can see it. So. So here's the, I'm going to illustrate what I'll talk about today. So let's say you make a space of modular symbols of some given level and weight 2. So that's that object that I just asked for there is M2 gamma 0 of n, which you know how to compute. You write down a list of Mannian symbols for gamma 0 of n, you quotient out by the 2 and 3 term relations, and that gives you this object. There's an action of Heck operators on it, m dot Heck operator, say 2, matrix. There's the matrix of the Heck operator T2 acting on this space of modular symbols. And there's a certain very special and important subgroup or submodule of modular symbols called the cuspidal submodule. I haven't defined this yet, but I will first thing off. And in this particular example, it has dimension 2. And so the original space is spanned by these three Mannian symbols. And the cuspidal subspace in this example is spanned by these two Mannian symbols. Now, associated to the cuspidal subspace, there's a way to get a whole bunch of Q expansions of modular forms to some precision. And it's a theorem that you get everything this way. And it's a theorem I'll explain to you. So this, what I just did was I got something which it takes as input two integers, which are supposed to be the entries. There's supposed to be a position in a matrix, and it outputs the Q expansion of a cusp form. And if I do this, as I vary through all I and J between 0 and 1, I will get, provably, a basis for the space. So in this case, the space of weight 2 cusp forms for gamma 0 of 11 is spanned by this one modular form. That's what I just showed you. So what I need to explain to you is two things. One, what is the cuspidal subspace of modular symbols? What's the definition? How do you compute it? And two, what does that have to do with computing Q expansions? How do you get a Q expansion from a modular symbol, or from a space of modular symbols? Now I'm going to tell you about computing the cuspidal subspace. This M2, I'll match the notation in the notes. M2 gamma 0 of n is yet again the space of modular symbols of weight 2 for gamma 0 of n, space spanned by the Mannian symbols. And inside of that, you have a very special subgroup or submodule, S2 gamma 0 of n. That's what I'm going to define now. This is cuspidal modular symbols. So here's the definition. Define a map called del. It's a boundary map from M2 gamma 0 of n to what I'll denote by B2 gamma 0 of n. B2 gamma 0 of n is a free abelian group on the equivalence classes of cusps, so on the gamma 0 of n orbits of P1 of Q. This is, you could think of it as think of it that way. No, you're not supposed to multiply these, of course. So it's a free abelian group of rank equal to the number of cusps. The boundary map is simply the map that sends alpha beta to the class of beta, which I'll write with braces, minus the class of alpha. And the kernel of that map is S2 gamma 0 of n. For example, if n is prime, then there are exactly two cusps. That's something that you can prove with elementary arithmetic. So if n is prime, there are two cusps. So this is a free abelian group of rank 2. Anything in the image of this map is something in that free abelian group, so that the sum of the coefficients is 0, since it's a linear combination of images of these things. So the subgroup of z cross z of things that the sum of the coefficients is 0, that's a subgroup of rank 1. So whatever this is, the image of this map would have dimension 1 in the case when n is prime. So the cuspidal subspace when n is prime has codimension 1 at most in M2 gamma 0 of n. However, you know that there's something, you know that the image is non-zero because the symbol 0 infinity in here, 0 and infinity are not equivalent under gamma 0 of n when n is prime. So when n is prime, the image of this map has dimension 1, and the subspace of cuspidal modular symbols has codimension 1. So, example, n prime implies that B2 gamma 0 of n is going to 2, and delta of 0 infinity is not 0 because it's infinity minus 0 and those two cusps are not equivalent. So the codimension of the subspace of cuspidal modular symbols inside of the full space of modular symbols is 1. So there are a lot of cuspidal modular symbols. Most, in the case of n prime, it's a codimension on subspace. It's in fact the case, and I won't prove this, that for any n, the image of this is as big as you could imagine. It's of codimension 1 over here. I guess it's really not that hard to see, because you can choose any pair alpha beta you want here. You can choose any pair alpha beta you want here, and this is just the free abelian group on these things. So if you're allowed to choose anything you want for alpha beta, all I'm saying is that that if you take inside of a product of copies of Z, if you take all elements of the form 1 minus 1 and then zeros everywhere else, then you get a you get a codimension 1. If you tensor with Q, you get a codimension 1 subspace. Or if you quotient out by that, you get Z. So actually, I guess that's obvious. This surjects onto this minus 1 dimension. So or this one dimensional, this codimension 1 subspace of P2 gamma 0 of n. So you can kind of see that this generalizes.
Can I ask a
question
about the notation? So the Z and the brackets.
Yeah, it doesn't mean generated by.
It's not a ring or anything.
Yeah.
It's not like a group ring. It's just the free abelian group of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I'm following the notation in a paper of Loïc Morvel where he first defines many of these objects. And it's not very good notation. Maybe this is a little clearer.
I was just making sure
Yeah, it would be very natural to have another structure. I don't like that notation, so I'll switch to this, which is a little bit clearer, I think, with diamond. This means just the free abelian group on this. And
I mean, much clearer notation yet would be
how's that? So that's very clear. Okay, so that's the subspace of cuspidal modular symbols, and it'll be extremely important for us to be able to compute this. As usual, I've given a definition in terms of modular symbols, the paths between cusps. It'd be nice to have a presentation of everything in terms of, I think you want this, which you might already have. I'm right now finishing off something that was in the notes from before. Over the weekend, I wrote a new section, 3.4, which is a different description, or which describes a different algorithm for computing the going from M2 gamma 0 of n to S2 gamma 0 of n. So this is what we're doing today. But the method that I had described before required Appian linear theory and a lot of linear algebra, and there's a much, much simpler approach that is also more natural and teaches you some neat things about modular forms that are unrelated to computation a priori. So I'm going to do that instead. And it's an opportunity to prove a nice fact about modular forms as well. Okay, so that's the cuspidal subspace. You can compute this purely using Manning symbols. If you have a presentation for M2 gamma 0 n just involving Manning symbols, then there's a nice description of how to compute this kernel. And that's described in section 3.3 of the notes from last time. So I'll just describe it in words, and then maybe show you an example. So there are really two things that go into computing this. One is, well, I guess for weight two, which is what we're doing, the Manning symbol business isn't too important. But one thing is, how do you compute this thing at all on the right-hand side? It looks maybe a little confusing. If n is, say, I don't know, 15, how do you write down B2 gamma 0 of 15? How do you write down the gamma 0 of 15 orbit for P1 of Q? Does anybody have any good ideas to do that? I mean, it seems kind of annoying. You might know how big it is, but where do you get started? You can take an element of P1 of Q, and then what do you do with it? I don't know. So here's a really simple trick that allows you to kind of, in a way, sidestep that question while answering it in the course of doing what you really want to do. So if you look at proposition 3.3.1 in the notes, if you happen to have them, which are not in the notes I handed out today, so maybe I'll just write it on the board since people don't have it. But it just gives a simple way of determining whether or not two of these elements of P1 of Q are equivalent modulo the action of gamma 0 of n. So I'll just summarize it up here. Simple way to decide if alpha and alpha prime in P1 of Q are equivalent. That is to say, is there an element of gamma 0 of n that sends one to the other? It's just a very simple congruence condition on the numerator and denominator of alpha and alpha prime. So here's what you do. You want to compute this map. So you take an element of M2 gamma 0 of n, represented as a Manning symbol, C, D. You lift it to a matrix, A, B, C, D. And this corresponds to the modular symbol that you get by applying this matrix to 0 infinity. So that's the modular symbol V over D, A over C. Then this modular symbol, we're getting from here over to here, maps to the class of A over C minus the class of B over D. So what you do is you just keep a list of the cusps you've seen so far in the course of computing this map. So at first we see A over C. So then we just say that's going to be our first basis vector for this free abelian group. Then you take B over D. You use proposition 3.3.1 to quickly decide, is B over D, is this cusp, equivalent to A over C? If so, then this is just some, in here, in this abelian group, this would just be minus that, so you're getting zero. If it isn't, then you add it into your list. And you just keep repeating this until you, until you're done computing the image of this, or done computing this map. So you make your basis for B2 gamma 0 of n in the course of explicitly computing this map. Does that make sense?
How do we know where this is?
Well, M2 gamma 0 of n, we've chosen a basis for it. And you go through each of the bases for M2 gamma 0 of n. For each one, you want to compute this map explicitly means to get a basis for each side and then write down a matrix that represents the map. So for each element of M2 gamma 0 of n, which is a finitely generated abelian group, a free finitely generated abelian group, you want to compute the image of that and write it in terms of a basis over here. You construct up the basis that you use over here in the course of running the algorithm via proposition 3.3.1. Okay. I'll show you how this works in practice.
So each time you have a basis element in your domain, you have something mapped over, and then you potentially either keep that or throw it away?
Yeah, or, well, let me just show you like an actual example, which may or may not clarify things. So we have our space M again, weight 2 level N. So I'll just reinitialize it, there's M. So there's a command boundary map. I'll call it del. Del is a reserved word in Python. So D. I'll call it B for boundary map. Okay. So it's a morphism. It's defined by this matrix, and it's on the basis that's used over here is M dot basis. So it's these three Manning symbols, blah blah blah, and that's the matrix. So what that means is when you take the symbol 1, 0, you lift it to a matrix. We can do this one. So 1, 0. Now I have to find a matrix in SL2Z that lifts this. So we'll take that one. And then over here we have, let's see, so infinity 0. That's the image of 0 infinity under this matrix. Infinity 0, that maps to this. So what it did was it chose 0 to be the first basis vector and infinity to be the second, and the image of 1, 0 under the boundary map is 1 minus 1. And that's why the first row of that matrix is 1 minus 1. The matrix is a matrix whose rows are the images of each of the basis vectors here. And it turns out that when you take the two other Manning symbols 1, 8 and 1, 9, then lift to a matrix, apply to 0 infinity, then take the difference of the two cusps. In each case, you get the difference of two equivalent cusps. Let's try that. So take the Manning symbol 1, 8. You want to lift that to the matrix in SL2Z. So let's see. So you can do that using the extended Euclidean algorithm. You want to write 1 and 8. Well, it's pretty easy. You just put 0 minus 1 here, I think. Yeah, let us determine it as integer entries and determine it 1. Then the corresponding modular symbol is minus an 8, 0. And it must be the case that minus an 8 is equivalent to 0 under the action of gamma 0 of 11. So this maps to 0 minus minus 8. And these two cusp classes are claimed by that output to be equivalent. So there should be some matrix in SL2Z, but in gamma 0 of 11 that sends, say, 0 to minus 1/8. Yes, please.
For that matrix over there, can we choose any A and B and the integer such
yes.
that the determinant is 1?
That's right. Okay. Anything you want. It's a coset representative for, this matrix is supposed to be a coset representative for one of the cosets of gamma 0 of n in SL2Z. So it's just supposed to be an element of SL2Z. There's a coset really sitting here that you can think about, which is gamma 0 of n times that matrix, 0 minus 1.8. The Mennen symbols are in bijection with the right cosets of your group inside of SL2Z. So these are supposed to be in SL2Z. You don't have to restrict them to be in gamma 0 of 11, which would be the only other reasonable thing to do, and would obviously not be right, because the lower left entry certainly isn't going, is definitely going to be 1, so it can't possibly be something in gamma 0 of 11. So let's verify that, in fact, 0 and minus 1/8 are equivalent cusps. And all you have to do is find a matrix in gamma 0 of 11, sorry, that sends 0 to minus 1/8. So the image of 0 under a matrix is it's the quotient of these two entries. So if we put minus 1 and 8 here, we have a chance. So let's see, is there any way to put something here that's divisible by 11 and something here so that these entries are like that? I honestly don't know. We don't have an idea. What if I put 22 here and 3 here, and you get 24, or maybe minus 22. 24, no, that doesn't work. Okay. What do you want to put? 4. Okay. So 32 minus 33. Determinant minus 1, but then we could just we can fix that by negating the whole thing. Okay. So that doesn't work. Minus 4, 33. That is a matrix. It's certainly in gamma 0 of 11, and its determinant is. Determinant is minus 1, so what did I do? Oh, you can't negate the whole thing, but minus 32, what? Plus 32, minus,
it should be 1, right?
What about that?
Yeah.
Minus 32.
Yeah, minus
that's
1
right.
Should be
better.
That's not 11.
Not 11.
It's 1.
Ah, yeah, thank you. Okay, so this is plus 32, so plus 33, so at minus 32. Minus 32 plus 33 is 1. And so you get this element. How did I find that? I just found it. I didn't use any method to find it just now. However, if you look closely at proposition 3.31, it says you input two numbers, given explicitly like this, and it tells you via congruence condition whether or not they're equivalent, mod gamma 0 of n. And moreover, if you look closely at what happens in the algorithm, you can turn it into an algorithm that gives you a matrix. If you look at the proof of the algorithm, if you look at the proof of the proposition. So you don't have to just find it by trial and error. But in any case, this matrix, the fact that you have a matrix in gamma 0 of 11 that sends 0 to minus 1/8, my sign's wrong. Sends it to 1/8. So I have to fix that. Thank you. So 0 gets sent to minus 1/8 under this matrix. That means that these two are equivalent. So this is equal to 0 in B2 minus 0 of 1. And that explains why the second and the third row are both 0. Now, the kernel of the boundary map is a subspace of, let's see, what is it? So you just have to sort of figure out what the kernel of that matrix is. So basically, something's in the kernel of that matrix, a vector of the three entries, is in the kernel of that matrix if its top entry is 0. Because, after all, what does it mean? It's just the kernel. So you find the column echelon form, if you like, and then you can find from it the kernel. But if you have the matrix is the linear map, the boundary map is A, B, C maps to A minus A. That's it. And the kernel of that map has bases 0, 1, 0, and 0, 0, 1. That's a basis for the kernel. So there's a two-dimensional kernel, and it's spanned by 1/8 and 1/9, and that's why M dot cuspidal submodule has basis 1/8 and 1/9, as indicated. So that's the cuspidal subspace. or a submodule. And that's how you compute it. Okay?
Right, now we have that, and now I can tell you about what's circled here. So now we have the cuspidal submodule. Very important. Now, there's a quick algebra that acts on M2 gamma 0 then, and it's simply the ring generated by the Heck operators, which I've defined before. The Heck operator TP, for example, on a symbol alpha beta is just the sum over certain matrices of their action on alpha beta, which in this case ends up being sum r equals 0 to, if I remember correctly, 0 to p minus 1, 1 r 0 p, acting on the symbol, if I'm remembering this correctly, it's p 0, 0, 1, on the symbol. And the cuspidal subspace is preserved under the action of this of these Heck operators. Let's see if that's clear from the definition. Think about it. As will I, since I don't know if it's clear from the definition. So question, is it obvious that S2 is preserved? That is to say, if you have something that goes to zero under this map, does its image under this Heck operator also go to zero? So just think about that for a second. It may or may not be obvious, in which case none of us will see an obvious reason. Another way to think about this question is if you can define an action of the Heck operators over here in such a way that this map commutes with that action, that it respects this action, then this will be a map of modules over the Heck algebra, and hence this kernel will be a module over the Heck algebra. If you have two modules over a ring and a homomorphism between them of R modules, then the kernel is again an R module. So that is a natural way of thinking about the problem I just stated. And there's a reasonable way to make the Heck operators act over here. Just use the same definition, except instead of acting on symbols like that, act on symbols like this. So you can also make the Heck operators act over here, maybe. Question. Can you make them act, just as I've defined it before, but on a single symbol? So this is the same sum, 1 r 0 p alpha plus E001 alpha. Of course, then you have to prove that that's well defined, and I haven't even proved that this is well defined, but in fact, this is well defined. Let's see if that's clear. So, by well defined, I mean that if you. That's actually interesting. So, by well defined, I mean that if you hit this entire thing on the left by an element of gamma 0 of n, then you should get exactly the same thing again. In other words, well-defined means that tp, so any gamma in gamma 0 of n, you have to have that tp of gamma alpha has to be exactly the same thing as TP of alpha. Okay, that's what it means to be well-defined. Since these two are supposed to be exactly the same element of this free abelian group. Okay, any questions? Now, the choice of these matrices that we're summing over was made exactly so that this would work, so that this would be well-defined. So. There's a way to describe these matrices is they correspond one-to-one to the lattices of index P. They're like the Hermite normal forms of bases for lattices of index P in Z cross Z. And when you
When you change by gamma, it's like you're right multiplying each of these matrices by gamma. And gamma is in gamma 0 of n. So, how to say it? I mean, you'll I'm assuming also P is equivalent to n. Since that's not the right definition of the Heck operator. Otherwise. Well, in any case, these matrices, they're exactly set up so that if you do a change like this, that doesn't, it's just changing sort of bases by element of SL2Z, you get a bunch of other matrices, but somehow the collection of all of them doesn't matter. Things just get permuted around up to gamma zero of n equivalents. So, I won't say too much more, except that a way to see that this is a Hecke module, a modular of the Hecke algebra, is to observe that B2 gamma 0 then also has an action of Hecke operators on it, as indicated. And the map delta, as I've defined it, sending alpha beta to beta minus alpha, that is a module homomorphism. It's a T-module homomorphism. Therefore, the kernel of this T-module homomorphism is itself a T-module. Okay? Again, there's a detail just to show that this is, in fact, well-defined, and I'm suppressing that. Okay, so this is a T-module. And now let's step back a minute, completely forget about modular symbols for the next 20 minutes, and learn something basic about modular forms. And then we're going to use that basic thing about modular forms together with what we know how to compute now, namely this with an action of Hecke operators on it, to compute a basis for S2 gamma 0 of n. So now you can forget everything you know about modular symbols temporarily. And just think about modular forms. In particular, just think about this space S2 gamma 0 of n, right here. T prime be the ring of Hecke operators as a subring of the endomorphisms of S2 gamma 0 of n. So this is a ring that's generated by these Hecke operators as they act on the space of Kuss forms S2 gamma 0 of n. And completely explicitly, here's what the Hecke operators are. Tn on a power series, sum n equals 0 to infinity, a sub n, oh, too many n's, a sub n, q to the n, here's what it is. So it's given in the equation 3.4.2, the new notes that I handed out. This formula is almost identical to the one that I gave before on level 1 modular forms. There's a slight difference in the case when n isn't coprime to the level, but it just directly generalizes that. And it's really just there's a sum missing in the notes, so just notice. So I'll write down the correct formula on the board. There's an obvious sum just completely missing from the notes. So it's the sum as n goes from 0 to infinity of the following coefficient of q to the n. So the coefficient of q to the n is the sum 1 less than or equal to d less than or equal to the GCD of n and m, n being the nth Hecke operator, of epsilon d times d times a sub mn over d squared. Okay, so let me explain this. One, in the notes, this summation on the outside is missing, but it doesn't make any sense without that there. The definition of epsilon is very easy. Epsilon of d is 0 if the GCD of d and n is 1, and it's 1 if the GCD is not, it's 0 if they're not coprime, and it's 1 if they are coprime. So usually it's 1. If you like, it's the If you know about Dirichlet characters, epsilon is the it's a character modulo n of modulus n. It's a trivial character modulo n. So that's it. That's what Tn does to Q expansions. And maybe to make it a little clearer what I'm doing here. One thing is, if this is, so notice that this might not be an integer. So if it isn't, then this is just zero. So let's see. So for example, if n is prime, it's the sum here. There are always two. So n is a prime, so there's either one thing or two things, depending on whether or not n are co-prime. So let me just write down the special case of a prime. So here you have, let's just separate it into two terms. So first, the terms where you only take the n's that are co-prime to n, so that you know that there's only one, this is always, when the GCD is one, so that would be, let's see, so I'll make p prime and p not divided n, so we don't have to worry about the epsilon. So, first, I'm taking only, I know what the answer is, so maybe I just write it down. There's really no point in that, since I've written down the general formula. I'm going to do things with it, so you'll get practice with it. So this is it. It's a formula which takes any Q expansion explicitly and gives you back another Q expansion. And this is the action of Heck operators on Q expansions of cusp forms. And the way you see this is you take the definition of the Heck operators as a sum over the matrices over here, acting on functions via the sort of sum of some bar k action like this. And you just rearrange things, just like it's basically a page of rearranging a series, and you end up getting this equality. So now, how to use this? So here's the amazing thing. There is a perfect pairing between S2 gamma 0 of n and the Hecke algebra that I just mentioned over here, except to take, instead of taking the z-span or the ring generated over z, just take the ring generated over c, the complex numbers. So here, t prime c is c adjoining the Hecke operators. So that's a finite dimensional complex vector space, but there's a perfect pairing like this. By that I mean that there's some bilinear pairing, and I'll define it explicitly in a moment. There's a bilinear pairing for which if you have something in here and it pairs to zero with every single Hecke operator, then the thing over here is zero. And likewise, if you have a Hecke operator that pairs to zero with every cusp form, then that Hecke operator is zero. When you have that structure, then you get that there's an isomorphism between S2 gamma 0 of n and the dual of the Hecke algebra. And equivalently, there's an isomorphism between the dual of the Hecke algebra, between the Hecke algebra itself and the dual of S2 gamma 0 of n. So the consequence we'll be interested in is that S2 gamma 0 of n is isomorphic to Hom
in the Heck algebra to complex numbers.
Now, this is just some, and this isomorphism will be completely explicit. Given any homomorphism like this,
which will be specified by giving the image of Tn for each n,
you get an element of S2 gamma 0 of n. And the really cool thing is this is just some thing. All you need to know is T prime sort of as an abstract ring acting on something. Doesn't matter what, it doesn't have to be cusp-forms. Just something isomorphic to cusp-forms. Anytime you write down a homomorphism like this, you recover from it an element of S2 gamma 0 of n. And that will give us an algorithm to compute S2 gamma 0 of n. What we'll do is instead of computing T prime acting on the cusp-forms, we'll instead compute T prime acting on modular symbols, on cuspidal modular symbols. And then all we have to do is write down a basis for this, and then that basis will carry over to give a basis for this, completely explicitly. Now I'll give you a complete proof of this proposition, just from the definition of Heck operators as given here. Okay? Any questions? Any questions at all? Okay? So now proof of the proposition. Now, as it's stated, it's kind of mysterious because I didn't say what the pairing is. But the pairing is very simple. It's the following. It's just given a modular form F and Heck operator T, the pairing of those two is the first coefficient of T applied to F. So A1 of TF means, if you look at the power series of TF, like over here, that's the coefficient of Q. In general, let's write AN is formal power series sum BM Q to the M. This is by definition B sub N, the nth coefficient. Okay, so whenever I AN is something, I mean the nth coefficient of it. So that's it, that's the map, that's the pairing. Given a modular form and a Heck operator, that gives you a number. This is a number. And now let's prove that it's perfect. So there are two steps. And in each case, I'm going to use a lemma. So here's a helpful lemma. Very easy to prove, given the definition of the Heck operators that I've stated over there. A lemma is that A1, first coefficient of Tn f is the same thing as, actually let me make sure I get this right, as the nth coefficient of f. Okay? So let's prove it. This should be immediate from the definition that I've written down up there. All you have to do is look at and figure out what the coefficient of Q is in the series expansion. That's all you have to do, and then we'll prove the lemma. So you specialize to the case M equals 1, and then look at what this is. So M is 1, so you know that you're summing over one thing, D equals 1. That's it. Because M is 1, I'm just taking this with M equals 1. And then D is 1, so epsilon of D, that's certainly, 1 is certainly coprime to N, so epsilon of D is 1. And then you have a 1 there for the D. And then you have A sub what? Well, it's M is 1, so it's A sub N. So A sub 1 times N over 1 squared, and that's just A sub N. Okay? So it's really just a triviality from the way that Heck operators act on Q extensions that this is true. Okay, any questions about that? Now, once we have this, everything else will be pretty easy. Well, one thing I'm going to use is that the Heck operators commute, and it's not at all clear that they commute from the formula on Q extensions. It is more or less, it is a fact that they commute. So these commute. And it takes a little bit of work, but it's really not that hard to show that they commute. It's better to use the other definition of the Heck operators as a sum over certain matrices in order to see if these commute. But basically, the fact that they commute is related to the fact that you get all lattices of index P times Q by taking lattices of index P and lattices of index Q and intersecting them. It's basically sort of an argument like that.
So they do commute, so we'll use that. So proof of the proposition, proof, well, it's just immediate from the formula. The lemma at least. Sorry. Immediate from the formula. Okay, so we have that, and now let's use it. So now proof of the proposition. So there are two directions. To show it's perfect, I have to take an f that pairs to 0 with everything over here and show that that f is 0. And I have to take a t that pairs with every f to give 0 and show that that t is 0. And then I'll prove the proposition. So let's first consider an f in S2 and 0 then, such that f t equals 0, every element t in the Hackett algebra t prime c. Well, the pairing is by definition a1 of tf. And the fact that f pairs to 0 with everything means in particular that f pairs to 0 with each t sub n. So you have that a1 t sub n f equals 0 for all n. But, as I just observed, a1 tnf is equal to a sub n of f. So we have this for all n greater than or equal to 1. And our f is a cusp form, which means that the constant coefficient of the power series is 0. It's not equivalent, but it implies that. So the fact that all of the coefficients of q to the n for n greater than or equal to 1 vanish tells you that f is 0 itself. Okay? So far we haven't used commutativity, but we've proved that if you have any cusp form here and it pairs to 0 with any Heck operator, then that cusp form is 0. All right, now let's do the other direction.
Why is that again? How do we get that f is 0 from?
Because all the coefficients of its power series are 0.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay, now let's do the next step. So, next, suppose you have a Hecke operator, T, such that Ft equals 0 for all F in S2 gamma 0 of n. What are we going to do? We want to somehow show that t is equal to 0. So we know that for any f, let's see. So ft, that's by definition an a1 of tf. And so here's what I wish I could show. The Hecke operators, this Hecke algebra t prime, notice it's a subring of the endomorphisms. So if I show that that Hecke operator acts as 0 on every modular form, then it's 0. Then the Hecke operator is 0. So I want to show that this Hecke operator acts as 0 on the modular form. What I know is that for any modular form, the Hecke operator, well, I don't know, just from this, I don't know that the Hecke operator acts as 0, but I know that the coefficient of q in tf is 0. That's what I have. This is equal to 0. That's my assumption. Now here's the trick. If you have a modular form f, then tnf is also a modular form. And we're assuming that for every single f, this pairing is 0. In particular, the pairing of T with TNF is 0.
Also.
However, the Hecke operators commute.
Therefore, this pairing is equal to A1 TN TF.
So did we prove
actually, we're not using that.
We didn't prove that they commuted.
No, we did not prove it. I sketched it in my mind. But, you know, I don't think we're using... Are we using that? I guess we are using it. We're definitely using that the Hecke operators commute.
So this step uses that the Hecke operators commute. Something I absolutely did not prove.
But it's not at all beyond what you could easily understand if you put your mind to it. From the definitions. A good reference, for example, you can read about this is Ling's book, An Introduction to Modular Forms, where in section 7.3 he gives this formula, and he also proves that the Hecke operators commute and so on. He gives it a definition in which it's easy to see that, and it proves that it's equivalent to this. So anyways, you have this from the fact that the Hecke operators commute. And now you're set, because use the lemma again, and this is just a sub n of TF. So a sub n of TF is equal to 0, which means that TF has all of its coefficients 0, because the n is arbitrary. So this implies that TF is equal to 0. And that means that T is the 0 operator. And that proves both directions. We've now proved that there's a perfect pairing between cusp forms and the Hecke algebra, which is extraordinary because it tells us that the Hecke algebra is identical to the homomorphisms from T prime to C, which is really, really nice because the Hecke algebra is something that you can get at just by finding any module in which the Hecke operators act in some reasonable way that maybe is abstractly via a theorem isomorphic to cusp forms, even if you don't know explicitly any isomorphism. So now we're in good shape. We have an isomorphism like this. Moreover, here's what the isomorphism is explicitly. Can make it very, very explicit as follows. I'll just tell you what it is. I want an isomorphism like that because I'm going to give you homomorphisms from T prime to C, and then I want to get from them modular forms. So here's how it works.
You have a homomorphism phi from T prime
to C, so the Hecke algebra acting on cusp forms.
You get a modular form f sub phi, and it's just sum phi of t sub n, q to the n equals 1 to infinity.
That's it. And to check that this is right, all you have to do is verify that, so it's an isomorphism, so let's map it back in the other way, make sure we get phi. So what homomorphism from the Hecke algebra do you get from this Q expansion?
If you pair f with Tn, that's what the homomorphism is associated, f phi. That's by definition A1 of Tnf, but that's by definition An of f, and the nth coefficient is phi of Tn.
So that shows that this is, well, it's a formal power series, but the correct formal power series for something that induces this homomorphism has the same coefficients, so it has to be the same thing. So amazingly, if you explicitly give me any homomorphism from the Hecke algebra, and really all you have to do is specify the images of the T sub n, I just write down this power series and I've given you a modular form. This is a cuspidal modular form. Moreover, I'm not proving this and I won't need this, but just an observation. You can ask about the homomorphisms here that happen to be ring homomorphisms. Here I'm just talking about homomorphisms of complex vector spaces. C vector space. But you can consider the subset of ring homomorphisms from this ring to that ring, and those correspond exactly to the normalized eigenforms in S2 gamma 0 of n, the eigenforms for all Hecke operators. And a really fun thing, if you know any algebraic geometry, is that the ring homomorphisms, set of ring homomorphisms from the Hecke algebra to C, this is exactly the same thing
as, take just by definition, so you take the spectrum of this and then take the C value points.
So the set of eigenforms, which is in bijection with ring homomorphisms, is exactly the same as the set of points of the Hecke algebra over the complex numbers viewed as a scheme, if you know about schemes.
So eigenforms. So normalized eigenforms. Normalize that the coefficient of Q is 1. Normalized eigenforms. These are the same thing as ring homomorphisms, which are the same thing as the points of this geometric object attached to the Hecke algebra. So that's an aside. Okay, but back to our story. We now have that whenever you find a homomorphism from the Hecke algebra to the complex numbers, you get a modular form. You get a cuspidal modular form. So now, back to modular symbols. Let's use them to compute a basis of these homomorphisms, and hence a basis of cusforms. So I guess there's a couple of ways of doing this. In the notes, I present a way which leads to a very efficient, practical algorithm. Let me give you just a slightly less efficient but quicker exposition of how to compute S2 gamma 0 then. So I'm going to give you a recipe. I mean, compute a basis for. So step one, compute M2 gamma 0 of N using Manning symbols.
Okay, so you write down a bunch of two-term and three-term relations, do the linear algebra, and you get that.
Step two, compute S2 gamma 0 of n, subspace of cuspidal modular symbols, as the kernel of the boundary map. That's what I just explained here.
Okay.
Step three, compute matrices. And I'm simplifying this a little from the notes. It's not as efficient as what's in the notes, but it's pretty close. It's just a little easier to understand yet. Compute matrices. So T sub n is a matrix acting on, by this I mean compute matrices. This is a matrix of, with respect to some basis, of Hecke operator Tn on the subspace of cuspidal modular symbols. So it's just some big matrix. It's an k by k matrix where this has dimension k.
Okay, so you do that for
matrices like this for n equals 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. up to some bound. We're ready to get a basis up to some bound. So a basis for this is a precision q to the p. So by that I mean it's big O of q to the p. So I give all the coefficients of the power series up to q to the p minus 1. So this up to p minus 1. Okay. 4. We're almost done.
All you have to do is the following.
Let A, I, j of any matrix, you get I, j the entry of that matrix. And then finally, that's just some notation. So finally, let F sub I, j equal sum n equals 1 to b minus 1 of a by j of this matrix. Here again, plus big O of q to the b.
So this means I've given a formal power series in Q explicitly, and I've given the coefficients of Q to the n up to, they're not including Q to the b. Then each of the Fij, well, they're just explicitly the image of a certain homomorphism under this comparison. Here's the homomorphism I'm using. So you have the action of the Heck algebra at S2 gamma 0 n. Given a Heck operator T sub n, you associate to it a matrix. And if you take, say, the upper left entry, that's a map. It sends the Heck operator to the upper left entry of the matrix. That's a linear map from the Heck algebra to the complex numbers. And each of these, aij square brackets tn, this is the map which sends a Heck operator tn to the ij-th entry of the matrix of the Heck operator. Each of these is one of these maps phi from the Heck algebra to the complex numbers. Actually, in each case, these really go to, I guess, the rational numbers. So each of these is actually an element, at least the precision that I've given. So this is an element of S2 gamma 0 of n. And moreover, because this is an isomorphism, you get, if you run through all possibilities for I and j, you'll have to get every single, you'll have to get a basis for S2 gamma 0 of n from this. Okay? And that is it. That allows you to compute S2 gamma 0 of n. It's complete. I haven't left out really anything from the algorithm. You know how to do this, certainly. You know how to compute this as the kernel of the boundary map. We did it for n equals 11. Computing these matrices, in practice, you want to use the Heilbronn matrices. I didn't completely describe those, but certainly you could use continued fractions and modular symbols to compute these if you wanted. And then this is just take that matrix and take always the upper left entry, for example, write down that power series, and amazingly, that is the power series of a modular form. And you can do that with all the other coefficients, and you end up getting a basis. So now I'll demonstrate this. In the demonstration, I've done things slightly differently than I've set up here, so that things can, in the long run, be more efficient. So the numbers aren't exactly the same as what you get out here. One slight variant of this is that instead of computing the Heck operators acting on S2 gamma 0 of n, you can compute the Heck operators acting on the subspace with the same eigenvalues as S2 gamma 0 of n of the dual of M2 gamma 0 of n. That might seem like a ridiculously complicated thing to add into the picture, but it turns out that there's a trick that makes that much faster in certain cases. So that's what I'm actually going to compute and what I showed you in a minute. It's really essentially no different than what I've done. So let me show you this. And then you have seen this whole algorithm. So we can take our favorite space of modular symbols, so level 11, weight 2, and this function, cuspidal, let S be the cuspidal subspace, submodule, and let F be Q expansion cusp forms 10. What this does, all it's doing right here, is computing matrices for T1 through T10. It's not really on here, it's on the dual of this, but that's just a technical point, and really things are almost identical. And then it's giving you a function that if you plug in an I and a j, like 0, 0, it gives you the Q expansion that you get out of taking the upper left entry of all these matrices. That's all it is. And that's the Q expansion of a modular form. We can do this for a more complicated space, like, level 23. S be a cuspidal subspace. The cuspidal subspace has dimension 4, and we can write down these Q expansions. Here's 1. You get to choose any I and j between 0 and 3, like that. And you get various Q expansions. And together they must all, it's a fact that they must be enough to generate the whole space of cusp forms. So that's a complete description of a way of getting a basis for S2 gamma 0 n. By the way, in fact, there is a notion of modular symbols for any weight and level, even for level 1, like level 1 and weight 12. I guess I've mentioned this already, that there's an analog of Manin symbols and so on, all for level 1, or all for higher weight. And you can do the same thing there. And oops, I forgot to reset S. Sorry. So, somehow it doesn't seem, those are too small. What did I do wrong? Oh, I forgot to recompute off. Okay, so let me just do this again. Modular symbols of level 1, the cuspidal submodule of modular symbols of level 1, then this map, which is just, it's the thing that gives you Fij, and here is F00. It is that. And notice that is delta, the Q extension of delta. Another check, if we go back to the level 11 weight 2 form, and then compute F, if we take that Q extension and get this one, remember that's supposed to be related to an elliptic curve of conductor 11. So it's looking up the elliptic curve. And Q eigenform of the elliptic curve, that's the modular form attached to the elliptic curve got by counting points over finite fields. And again, they match up. So
What is capital B again? What
it's just a bound. It's an input to the algorithm.
Okay.
So you can choose any B you want. What I'm doing here, I'm choosing 10. Here.
Yes.
But you could choose 100 if you wanted, and it'll get B. Yeah, it would take longer. What it's doing is it's computing the Heck operators T1, T2, all the way up to T100. And then when I do this, it's giving me the upper left entry of each of those matrices. And, you know, there it is. You can see it all a little bit more explicitly, directly as I've described it over there. So N is level 11 weight 2, S is the cuspidal submodule, as this basis. I can write down a Heck operator and then ask for the matrix. And there it is, and you take Heck operator T3. And my claim is simply, or what I've proved to you, is simply that if you take always, say, the upper left entry, then that gives you the coefficients of the Q extension of the modular form. Here, these matrices are all diagonal. They're all diagonal, so you are actually getting eigenvalue. You're actually getting a system of eigenvalues. But it even works when the matrices look really crazy. So if you look at level like 23, then pass to the cuspidal submodule, then ask for Heck operators. These will look a lot more complicated. That one doesn't, but that one looks pretty. That one looks pretty complicated. And the amazing thing is that, I mean, you get a homomorphism on the space of these matrices just by taking whatever entry you want. So always take the lower left entry. That will give you the Q expansion of a modular form, because it's just the Q expansion. It's just this Q expansion, and the homomorphism is the one that I'm explicitly computing. So there's some modular form that is 0 times Q plus minus 1 times Q squared plus 2 times Q cubed, and so on, and that's the Q expansion of some modular form of level 23. When you think about cusp forms, it's completely equivalent to think about homomorphisms from the Heck algebra. By the way, here's a fact that I didn't prove, which is slightly useful. Here, this was all over the complex numbers. Inside of S2 gamma 0 of n, there's a submodule, a z-module. You take all of the modular forms whose Fourier expansions have integer coefficients. It's a perfectly natural thing to consider. So that's denoted S2 gamma 0 of n, semicolon z. This is S2 gamma 0 of n. You take a subset of elements in here that have integer Fourier expansion at infinity. So this is by definition, if you like, S2 gamma 0 of n intersected with z double brackets q. So some things with integer Fourier expansion. This has a perfect pairing with t prime without the c there. So everything that I did works over the integers, not over in addition to the complex numbers. This is just the base extension of something that's true over the integers, which in particular tells you that there's a basis for this with integer power series, which is something we saw in level 1 with the Victor Miller basis. But it's true in general. So that's it. If you want to compute a basis for S2 gamma 0 of n, it's completely equivalent to find a bunch of matrices and Heck operators and just pick off various entries systematically, and that gives you a basis. And you know, one module that you can work with is modular symbols, but there are others. There are others that involve ideal theory and quaternion algebras, which turn out to be closely related to modular forms. And from those, you can also recover most modular forms, at least. So there's a number of different modules that you can work with. Let's see, do I want to show you anything else? Let's just try another example that's a little bit bigger. And I'll stop. So, oh, by the way, last time, remember there was a bug that appeared when we computed the characteristic polynomial of a Heck operator. I think it was it 550?
What did you? 541.
541. So. It's now fixed. The problem was that I was using the Chinese remainder theorem to compute the characteristic polynomial modulo of several primes, and the bound that I was using was a bound on the side, the absolute value of the number, so I had to change it. I had to replace the bound, the number of primes you have to work modulo, by twice that bound, and then it works fine. Basically, I wasn't compensating for the sign, so I couldn't determine it. I was getting this, but the minus 3468 was being replaced by its additive inverse modulo of something. Modulo is found. So this is okay now. Anyways, so you can try a bigger space like 100, and then S is the cuspidal submodule, and then you can make this F, which gives Q expansions to precision 10, and then again you can start plugging in things. This takes a while. It's computing 10 Heck operators on this space. It's not too bad. And you get various Q expansions out. And of course, what you really want to do is list just enough of them so that you get up to the dimension of the space, then compute the reduced Roche-Chalon form, and hopefully, if that's everything, then you're done. You don't have to compute all of these. I haven't really said much about the tricks to make this efficient, but there are a lot of tricks for making this far more efficient than what I'm describing. You see, you get a bunch of Q extensions, and together they give you a basis. Actually, here, a basis to precision 10 is, it's very simple if you put it in reduced Roche-Chalon form. To precision 20, maybe a little bit less simple. So, okay, so I'm going to stop 3 minutes early because I didn't stop to give you a break. And we'll have office hours tomorrow if you want to come and talk to me about any of your ideas regarding these projects. So that's from 3 to 5 tomorrow. And on Wednesday, you should all turn in outlines of your projects. So I'll know what you're doing. And then the following week after that, you'll turn in a first draft, which I can give you all kinds of comments on. Then a week after that, we'll be done, and we can turn in the real project, which I'll put on the website. Okay, any questions or comments? And on Wednesday, I'm going to start talking about how to compute all Eisenstein series using Dirichlet characters, and so on. So I'll talk about the basic theory of computing with Dirichlet characters, which I made up, and then I'll tell you how to write down all Eisenstein series. So I told you how to get all the cuspid forms, so I didn't tell you how to get the Eisenstein series. So these are the generalized ones. So just E4 and E6. And if you want to read ahead, it's the next chapter in the book that's online. Okay, so then I'll see you on Wednesday, or Tuesday.
I'm not going to be here on Wednesday.
Okay.
I just dropped off in the mailbox.
Or email it to me, just an outline. Are you going to write it by hand? Or,
No, I'll check it. I'll tell you that.
Okay, sure. Just email it to me. That's even better. What are you going to do your project on? Have you decided yet?
I think I want to try to do the point parade. So I'm going
to
read about it and see if I comprehend it.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to looking at it.
See you later.
Yeah, see you later. Adriano Garcia said he wanted to talk to me tomorrow. There's stuff that about. I think we made it. We said we had 8:30. So if you're available, then it would be really good if you drop by.
I'm actually going to be out of town, going on a plane tomorrow morning.
Understood. Yeah. I assume there'll be basically nobody here. I should have asked if anyone will be here on Wednesday.